This is Morning Air.
This is about educating a people that for 40 years haven't been given the full truth. It's time now to speak the truth.
When you do things to the best of your ability, keeping Jesus number one and doing everything you possibly can for His glory, that's a winner.
You are called to make the light of Christ shine brightly in the world.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio.
Good morning once again. It's Glenn in for John. Thanks so much for joining us. Got a big week lined up for you, and we'll start with one day at a time. A big hour lined up for you, as a matter of fact. Tackling some of the small questions today, like how to respond if your child says they're gay. Joe Dallas joins us for that discussion before the hour is through. We'll look at a great new initiative to help Native Americans get higher education. Dr. Carmelita Lamb joins us from the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. And we start out this portion of the hour with a little music on the way here. Catholic singer and speaker Anna Nuzzo joins us. Good morning, Anna. Great to have you along today.
Thank you so much. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Great to have you along. Great to have you along as well. We've had the chance to chat a few times in the past, and Anna is one of those special folks that does music for a living, which is a great thing, and also had to come out of the season of COVID here in terms of how that affects those that travel and sing and speak and do things like that. And maybe first off, how are things shaping up now that we are, I guess we're keeping an eye on that Delta variant, but coming out of the year and a half almost of shutdowns and folks are gradually getting back together again, how has that experience been for you?
It was a huge learning experience for me, because it's taught me to kind of appreciate more what I have been blessed to be doing since my Marian consecration, which is going out, traveling, singing for retreats, missions, conferences, and whatnot, because everything shut down. And I had sort of begun to just assume that I would continue to have all these beautiful opportunities to meet people, minister to people, and just share where I'm at in my faith and learn through others as well how the Lord is working through them. And when everything shut down, I was actually in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, about to do an event that evening, and they called me and said, everything, it's just shut down and we're not going to have the event. And I was I was so sad. I came home and everything down for months. Now that things have returned to more normalcy, I guess I appreciate it so much more. I don't take for granted these amazing opportunities to just speak with each person that I meet along the journey, and hopefully inspire them and also in turn get inspired from them and grow in our faith and our spiritual life. So with the shutdown, I was home, and I did use that time to work on a new CD, a Marian Apparition CD. So I was blessed to make use of that time. But now it's just, my heart is on fire to spread again this strong devotion to the Blessed Mother and these songs that can help people learn about the apparitions and her messages of what she's telling us, to do throughout the world.
It's so good that good has come out of this this time of shutdown. In learning to appreciate kind of things we had taken for granted beforehand, and now, like you said, that opportunity to sing and speak to people is a special thing. Even something as normal as going to Mass, and that was affected for a few months last year as well. Did you find that you were more thankful and grateful for that basic opportunity once that returned as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes without saying. I was just yearning for the Eucharist again. And I'm thankful in my diocese, I'm in the Milwaukee Archdiocese, that the Archbishop, opened things up pretty quickly. And it was such a blessing to me and my family.
Tell us more about how you were able to make some very productive time of some of that downtime and being inspired to write more and sing more about Mary.
Well, so As we all know, we were home. My husband was even home from work for a while, and I was in my piano room trying to write songs for my album, and he would be in the living room trying to do conference calls. It was quite humorous because
well, they had nice background music, yeah.
They did, and he'd be like, "Okay, I'm going to have a call in about 30 minutes," and I'm like, "All right, I'm in the middle of a song, but I'll try and you know stop at that time." So we were like sort of scheduling our you know our work around you know what was happening, and then my kids were home from college, and it was sort of like a blessed chaos, let's put it that way. It was really a grace though, because you know, we were empty nesters. Both of our kids had gone off to college, and now here they were. So we also took that time, and actually it was beautiful because we were able to, you know, play games with them like we used to do in the evenings and talk more, because when they're away at school, you know, I get a text here and there. I don't know how it was with you and
yes,
your kids.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
That, you know?
Absolutely. They don't understand that yet. They will someday, but they don't now, do they?
They don't.
And
you know,
to
I
look for those positive things.
Yeah. Yeah, I just continue to pray for them. And the way the world is today, you know, my husband also, we did our consecration to St. Joseph. This being the year of St. Joseph, and with that, and you know, learning that he is the increaser, he increases our faith and our virtues, and we've grown to, you know, through his intercession, pray a lot more for our children, and ask, you know, for him to guide our children as well, and as he protected, you know, his spouse, the Blessed Mother, and Jesus, you know, the great protector and guardian, with the world the way it is today, that's my fervent prayer is for him to protect our kids.
We're talking with singer and Catholic speaker Anna Nuzzo this morning on Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. We want to talk in just a little bit, Anna, about this great event coming up at Our Lady of Good Help, the Shrine in Champion, Wisconsin, the only officially approved North American apparition of Our Lady. And we look forward to that and hearing about that music. But as you talk about St. Joseph and a good year for all of us fathers to really kind of hang on to that example when we need to do a lot of protection for our families, we want to listen now to some of your work, including the St. Joseph consecration song. Tell us how that came about.
Oh, that's such a beautiful story. So I'm a friend of Father Don Calloway's, and I had heard about his consecration to St. Joseph's book that actually came out before the Pope declared it was going to be the year of St. Joseph. So talk about providential timing. And it wasn't on my heart to, you know, do this consecration until around Christmas time. I was really feeling pulled and called to do this, and I proposed it to my husband, and he said, yes, I would love to do that with you. So we started, I think it was in February, then we would consecrate in March on the solemnity. So I ordered the books, and they have all these beautiful prayers in the back of the book, so many that Father Don acquired and put all together for us. And so what I ended up doing was I met Father Mike Brennan, who is the director of the National Shrine of St. Joseph up in De Pere, Wisconsin. And I was having breakfast with him and another friend, and I asked him if there was a particular prayer, because I was reading so many prayers and I just didn't know which one was on my heart to do a song. And I asked him, could you help me? Is there a particular prayer that you feel would make a beautiful consecration to St. Joseph's song? And he said, yes, I know just the one. And he pulled it up on his phone, and it's the Old Blessed Joseph Prayer of Consecration from the Annals of St. Joseph in 1889. So it's this old prayer that the minute I read it, I just like fell in love with it, and it felt, it just resonated in my heart. So I took that prayer, and when I went home, I sat at the piano and I was immediately drawn to place a melody to it that would be, you know, soothing, that would help those learn this prayer by singing it, because I found that to be such a blessing. Many people tell me the prayer songs that I've written help them learn these prayers and their children. And, you know, it's through the Holy Spirit that he's, you know, I'm feeling called to help people pray in this way. So I worked on the song. I did it and I sent it to Father Don Calloway. And I said, here, what do you think of this song based on this prayer? And he loved the song, but he said, you know what, Anna, it's missing the word consecrate. And I said, you know what, you're right. You know, it talks about, you know, oh, blessed Joseph, and obtain for me these graces and instruct me and comfort me. And I didn't even realize it didn't have the word consecrate in it. So he inspired me and I added a chorus with receive me as I consecrate to thee. And then I, you know, I sent it to him and he's like, that is just beautiful. And it was the final piece of this song to make it truly, I think, as powerful as it is as a prayer. So I'm excited that you'll be sharing it on air, and there is a music video for it that I recently released, so people can kind of see the making of it. And I was blessed that Brother Jonathan Turba from the National Shrine of St. Joseph, he created the cello part for me for this song. So
it's beautiful.
Pay attention to the cello part.
Mm-hmm. Let's give a listen to the cello and, of course, the beautiful voice and piano work as well. Here's Anna Nuzzo on Relevant Radio.
Receive me, oh blessed. receive me as thy child. Receive me. Receive me. Receive me as I consecrate to thee. Receive me as I consecrate to thee.
The St. Joseph Consecration Song, a beautiful, beautiful work by Anna Nuzzo this morning here. Some music for you on Morning Air on Relevant Radio. Anna, great job there. Great job. Love the cello as well. Hey, let's shift gears. We've got a couple minutes left here. We want to talk a little bit more about, you just mentioned St. Joseph in song, but talk about the album of Marian Apparition Songs, as well as a little bit about the 150th anniversary of folks being saved during the Peshtigo fire by Our Lady.
Oh, yes. So I live in Wisconsin, and that's where the Champion Shrine is, Our Lady of Good Help, which, as many of you know, is the site of the only U.S.-approved Marian apparition right now. And it's about 3 hours north of me, and I've been blessed to go there, pray there, sing there with my family many times. And coming up the weekend of October 8th and 9th it's Adele Breeze Day, but it's also the 150th anniversary this year of the Peshtigo fire, which took place on October 8th. And so I felt called when I was doing the album to write a song based on Father Edward Looney's Our Lady of Good Help litany. So that is such a beautiful prayer he wrote a couple years ago. And I took this beautiful prayer asking Our Lady to pray for us and turned it into this song that he has shared. And I have been singing a lot lately at my missions and things, because it's just asking through her intercession to pray for us for all these different transgressions and things that we're going through. And he actually wrote a version during the pandemic, like a COVID version, asking to pray for doctors, pray for all those with COVID, pray for all those. And that was beautiful as well. But this song on the album is the original version based on his beautiful prayer. And so I don't know if people know much about the Peshtigo fire, but it happened at the same time as the Chicago fire. And the Chicago fire received so much more publicity, but this fire it blazed for like 2 hours, and it was 40 miles long and 10 miles wide. And it just devastated over 2 billion trees in Wisconsin, and it killed approximately 1,500 people. And it's just fascinating when I learned that at the shrine they have the history, and I didn't even know about it when I first went there. So basically what happened was, it happened like 12 years after the apparitions, and Adele's father had built a small chapel at the site where she had received the Marian apparitions. She had received like 3 different visions from the Blessed Mother in 1859. And the fire was 1871. And so when the fire was blazing because of this drought, many people in the area that were working with Adele and her ministry, they flew with their families and their babies to the chapel. And they all started fervently praying as the fire is blazing around them. And what happened was, it started to downpour and rain after, this time of drought. And that ended up protecting the chapel and the grounds and the area right around the chapel where the shrine is today. But the woods around it and all the way up to the fence right around the chapel was just completely burned. And you could, at the time, the fence on the inner part by the chapel was completely unscathed, but the outer portion of the fence was burned. It stopped right at the fence. And it's like, through the Blessed Mother's intercession and their prayers, they were saved. And it's just so fascinating. And I just hope all of your listeners get a chance to someday go to the Champion Shrine in Wisconsin and learn more about that.
You absolutely can learn more about it at the Our Lady of Good Help Shrine in Champion, Wisconsin. Definitely worth checking out online and then in person when you can. Also, Anna Nuzzo, we want to thank you so much for your time with us, for your beautiful music, and invite folks to check out what you're up to as well. Being able to set all those prayers to music, you could probably sing a restaurant menu for us, and we'd enjoy that as well. We appreciate your work so much. AnnaNuzzo.com. for more info as well. Thank you very much, Anna. Still to come this hour, lots on the way. We're going to talk about how to respond if your child says they're gay. That's coming up before we're through with Joe Dallas. Also this hour, we'll do another Glenn Story Corner. And up next, Dr. Carmelita Lamb from Bismarck, North Dakota at the University of Mary, talking about a new initiative for Native American education and scholarships. That's up next as we continue with more of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Support for Relevant Radio is provided by the University of Mary. Monsignor James Shea is the president of the University of Mary. Come to Mary.life.
Get connected to the conversation. Call us now at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You're listening to Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. It's Glenn in for John. Still to come, our story corner for the day as well. But now a great chance to talk about a great new opportunity for Native American education. Dr. Carmelita Lamb is joining us. She's with the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. Dr. Lamb, so great to have you along. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you and good morning.
Dr. Lamb serves as a grantee trainer for the U.S. Department of Education and is a principal investigator for Native American Education Leadership Program under the direction of the U.S. Office of Indian Education. She serves as associate dean of the Liffrig Family School of Education and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Mary. Talk about what this new program means and how it's kind of groundbreaking and I guess necessary and needed for a long time, too, for that matter.
Well, absolutely. The University of Mary has, this is the third award that the University of Mary has been able to acquire through the Office of Indian Ed, which is a department under the U.S. Department of Education in Washington, D.C. And it's groundbreaking for a couple of reasons. One, it provides a tremendous opportunity for Native scholars here in the Northern Plains to attain a degree in teacher education at the bachelor's level or a master's degree in education leadership through K-12 principal or superintendent, as well as special education strategist and director. And now we're adding the next level to this, which is a reading master's with a administration credential. So we've been able to, since 2016, acquire a number of these federal grants and for a Catholic private university to be in that competition and be successful has been truly a new era for the University of Mary and what we're able to accomplish in our servant leadership programs here in Bismarck.
Talk a little bit about what some of the struggles have been for Native Americans in the world of higher education.
Primarily, when we look at being able to bring these types of programs to the Native communities, it's having a program that is online, for one thing, because many of them live in remote communities on Indian reservations around the Northern Plains area, and particularly here in North Dakota, where we have multiple Native tribes on reservations. And for them to leave their home communities and be in Bismarck to earn this type of leadership degree is a hardship for them. They have to leave their families and their jobs and whatnot. But the University of Mary has, if not the best program, one of the best programs in ed leadership right here available online with award-winning, nationally recognized faculty. And throughout this, we're embedding this leadership, this servant leadership, this opportunity to be in the community and serve the community. Those types of those types of virtues are truly embedded in all the courses within University of Mary, whether it's a bachelor's all the way out to the doctorate.
Now, for you, Mary, to get this opportunity, is there some special marketing efforts that need to be done to reach out to the Native community?
Well, certainly this is part of our conversation this morning. We would like to be able to let those folks know out there that have Native American heritage to reach out to us at the University of Mary. You don't have to be in North Dakota. You don't have to even be in Bismarck. You can be anywhere in Indian country as long as you're showing Native heritage that you would be eligible for this program because it is online. And so we do have applicants who are as far away as New Mexico and Arizona, and then some that are right here in North Dakota with us. And so we want to be able to get the word out about this tremendous opportunity for Native scholars. We're in a partnership with United Tribes Technical College, which is a tribal college right here in Bismarck, right down the road from the University of Mary. And these two institutions of higher ed have had a long-standing partnership and a relationship of collaboration over the past 35 years, going back to Sister Thomas when she was our beloved president here at Mary. And so the university has asked United Tribes Technical College to help us in that undergraduate sector because they're already preparing Native scholars for undergraduate K-12 teacher education in the teacher realm in the classroom. So we like that partnership, and it gives us an opportunity to reach more individuals.
Certain parts of the country, including the Dakotas, for example, home to many Native Americans, but nationwide, it seems like sometimes the cause of helping the Native community move forward only pops up once in a while if, say, a sports team name gets changed. For example, next year, the Cleveland Indians becoming the Cleveland Guardians. The Washington football team does not have a nickname, having used the Redskins for many, many years. Are there some things we can do to better increase awareness of the challenges Native Americans face today?
Well, I think that our country as a whole is looking towards the Native American community as first Americans. There is a brand new museum that's being opened in September in Oklahoma called the First American Museum. And it's right in Oklahoma City. And I think these types of things where there's a recognition of Native population not being a problem, but a contributor to our American fabric here in the United States. And the more that we're able to do to bring opportunity, especially educational opportunity, to Native American communities in our country, the better we'll all be, not just Native communities, but all of us together. And I think that is really conveyed through the University of Mary's mission and vision to include all people in the opportunity to better themselves through education.
Now, historically, say people from small towns might move to the big city, go to the big university, and then maybe stay there for their job. Some may come back to the small town they're from and try to make that better. Is that same dynamic at work with maybe even a little more pressure to return to the home community and help build that up?
Well, many of our Native scholars in those reservation communities are born, raised, their family has always been there, and so certainly they have a very deep tie to that community, and that means that they're invested, that they intend to stay there, that their goal is to provide education, high quality education, to their children there in that community. But we do have a significant sector of Native people that are in urban areas, and for those individuals who seek advanced education to go back into those schools where there are a high population of Native children, and that's our home community here in Bismarck, Mandan. We have the largest population of K-12 students in the state, and the largest significant percentage of those students are Native American. So those two things kind of fold over right here in Bismarck, Mandan. So of course, if we can train more Native teachers to go into those classrooms to be that visual, that optic that shows opportunity to those children, they see their face in the face of their teacher. I can't think of a better way to move an entire population forward in the opportunity to advance in education.
Talk a little bit about some of the practical steps that one could take if they'd like to get involved.
Well, certainly the first step is to reach out to us at the University of Mary. And once that inquiry is made, we will work for that student to or that potential student to provide them the best curriculum possible for their goals, whether it be in special education, whether it be in leadership, whether it be in reading, or maybe just earning their first degree as a bachelor degree in teacher education. In any of those areas, the University of Mary is poised and ready to welcome potential candidates for this program. It pays for tuition, it pays for books and fees. Later in the grant, over the term of the grant, it pays for professional development. It's just a marvelous opportunity for anybody with Native heritage who seeks to advance their career.
Oh, very good. And how has it enriched you to help be involved in this and maybe learn a little more about Native communities too?
Well, thank you for asking that. I was recruited to the University of Mary in 2014, and I had previously worked within the Native community for teacher education. And so I worked at a tribal college, Turtle Mountain Community College, which is right along the Canadian border. I was their teacher education chair and worked to advance those students within that community to go into the classrooms on the Turtle Mountain Reservation. From there, the University of Mary, which was... You know, there's no such thing as a coincidence. it was meant to be that way. I was called to the University of Mary, and when I came here, the caveat was, can I continue my passion for Indian Ed? And my dean, Dr. Rod Jonas, was so kind. He said, "Well, of course, this is what we want, of course." And never knowing that we were going to start writing these grants and participating in these competitions. And being so successful. This last competition that was awarded here just a week and a half ago was for $2.88 million, which is the most we've ever been able to be awarded. And so we're very thankful and grateful.
Oh, beautiful story there. And finally, I know, well, we've all grown up with teachers. We all can remember a small handful that were our favorite teachers, those teachers that seemed to really care, really get us, really care about children in general. I've had that experience meeting several great Catholic school teachers and chatting with them on the radio through the years as well. And that common theme is just that love of kids. For those who are thinking about becoming a teacher in general, what ought they be thinking about, and what should we be looking for in our next generation of teachers?
Well, I teach an undergraduate class, and so here are our young educators in the process of being formed at the University of Mary, and I always open up this class by saying that being a teacher is first a vocation. We're called to be teachers, and that vocation is the strongest component of what we are in that classroom. The next is it's a profession. It's a professional entity within our community. We're seen as the leaders in that community. Teachers are held to a very high standard in all ways, ethically, you know, as well as morally and virtual, in a virtual navigation of our life day to day. And finally, it is a job. Certainly, we all want to have a job so that we can support our families and be there for our children and provide the things that are necessary for them to be able to thrive. So in that order, a vocation, a profession, and a job, that is what the way that teachers should see their role in the community as educators.
Well, Dr. Carmelita Lamb, we appreciate so much your insight on education there and helping the Native American community as well with some new opportunities from the University of Mary. And speaking of that, we'll talk with Monsignor Shea before the week is through with some more good news from University of Mary as well. Doctor, thanks for your time this morning and blessings on your continued good work there. Still to come this hour, our story corner coming up, and around the corner, Joe Dallas. With the, wow, who thinks they can handle this question easily? Responding if your child says they're gay. That's next as we continue with Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day. This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's Glenn in for John. His Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. Story Corner coming up in just a little bit. Also coming up in the next hour, we're always happy to check in on Mondays with Father Burke Masters. He's the chaplain of the Chicago Cubs baseball team, among other things, and maybe he's doing some consoling work today after a weekend sweep by the Southsider Chicago White Sox. Also, Emily Jaminet joins us in the next hour talking about getting back to the basics, resetting our prayer life. That's all on the way as well. But right now, a snippet of some conversation will continue later in the week, talking more about the Holy Father's motu proprio, about some new rules and regulations regarding the celebration of the Latin Mass. And Kim Morgan joins us with some insight into the good parts of the Latin Mass that she enjoys.
We were looking for something better for the kids, and I think that's kind of what started it. Now, I definitely was not looking for Latin, Glenn. That is not my style. I like being able to say the words. I like being able to understand the words. I like that idea of participation. But when you go to the very core of what a mass is, we are called to worship. We are not called to participate. In my very first experience at a Latin mass, I ran into a friend and I said, well, you know, how do you ever follow along in this? I'm so lost. It doesn't even follow the same order as the Novus Ordo mass. It varies slightly. It's all the same stuff. It's just sometimes in a different order. And she said, I don't. And I said, what do you mean you don't? She says, I don't follow along in Latin Mass. And I said, well, what do you do? And she goes, I pray. I know the priest is taking care of the prayers that are required of us as Catholics. I can pray within my heart, and I can read my missal, and I can follow what the readings are and read the gospel whenever at that time I choose to read it throughout the time that I'm in that church building. She said, but that's not my job, to know everything and to participate in everything. My job is to worship. And I thought, huh. So I sat there for a few weeks not doing anything, Glenn. We'd go back every week and I'd resistantly go, and I'd often be tempted to go to like 7 a.m. Mass first at our local parish and then go down to the Latin Mass. And I sat there for a few weeks doing that what she said, absolutely nothing other than praying. But it started to become rather routine in the rhythm that you could feel as you stand, as you sit, to knowing where we were at in the Latin liturgy. And I was starting to able to be to follow along. And so gradually it kind of grew on me. Now, is it quiet? Yes. Can you understand the priest all the time? No, not all the time. And I don't know why. I don't have the answer to this, why they're not mic'd. But when they're up at the altar, they're not mic'd. They're mic'd to read the gospel and to give the homily, but that's about it. But again, you kind of start getting used to the rhythm. You hear the Latin words enough to know the responses, at least the very short ones. And with your spirit is probably one of the most frequent phrases said during Latin Mass. It kind of just was a gradual movement towards holiness.
And a little snippet of Kim Morgan joining us, and we'll hear more later in the week about some of the finer points and the positive points of checking out Latin Mass as well. We talked with Pablo Kay recently about some of the things in the news, and let's touch base with Pablo as well this morning. Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio. It's Glenn in for John today, looking at some interesting things in the news from a Catholic perspective. It's kind of what we do day in and day out here at Relevant Radio. Joining us right now, Pablo Kay is here. Pablo is editor-in-chief of Angelus News to look at some of these stories. Pablo, great to have you along today.
Hey, Glenn. How's it going? Great to be here.
Yeah, doing well, doing well. Might be summertime, but that doesn't mean things aren't cooking, especially when it comes to life issues. And one of those we want to look at is something Congress normally handles, and it's maybe a little hassle to keep passing the Hyde Amendment each and every time, but that keeps abortions from being funded by taxpayer money. But that's been left off of an appropriations bill, which is the normal way that's taken care of.
Right, you know, and pro-life advocates are regarding this the Hyde Amendment. They're understandably very worried. Like you said, the first time, and I think since 1976, that it's been left off the budget. This was one of the few kind of measures to limit abortion that found agreement across both the sides of the aisle, right? Republicans and Democrats, I think over the years, kind of saw this as a sensible piece of legislation.
Well, we find, you know, in the last couple election cycles, now it used to be abortion was an issue that people had positions on, strong positions in real life. Politicians had positions too, but they didn't necessarily like to publicly stand by those, especially if it was on the pro-choice side. But nowadays, we find people thinking that's the best thing you could stand for almost. And so there's less and less of a worry to even have a vote on record against life.
Right. And you see this, unfortunately, the example of our president, Joe Biden, just the second president of the United States who professes the Catholic faith. And all his very long career on Capitol Hill, especially in the Senate, and then also as vice president, this was, even though he kind of maintained this public support for abortion rights, separating it from his private opposition to legal abortion, this was always something that he himself advocated for, this Hyde Amendment and other similar limits and constraints on federal funding for abortion. So for him to come out, I think it was really months before the general election, in support of removing the Hyde Amendment, was a big shift for him, and kind of, I think, an indicator of the direction that the Democratic Party has gone in terms of buckling down on support for abortion rights.
You know, our bishop's understandably not happy with this news about the Hyde Amendment. A statement from Cardinal Timothy Dolan, chairman of the USCCB's Committee for Religious Liberty, and Joseph Nauman of Kansas City, the archbishop who's chair of the Committee on Pro-Life Activities, say the House has voted in a way that's completely out of step with the will of the American people, who overwhelmingly oppose taxpayer-funded abortion. Plus, the Hyde Amendment, they figure through time, has saved 2.4 million lives since its enactment. And we know, talking to pro-life workers, anything that disrupts kind of that easy flow of just driving to the abortion center and getting it done right now, anything that gives people pause and the time to think, even if it's people out on the sidewalk, not even holding signs, but out there obviously in a posture of prayer, can make someone stop just long enough to change their mind and save that life. So every measure like this is of great importance. Talking with the editor-in-chief of Angelus News, Paolo Kay is with us today. And another giant pro-life bit of news in the news, currently at the Supreme Court, a Mississippi law that would make abortion illegal after 15 weeks of gestation. This looks like it's the one that's had the best chance so far, Paolo, to challenge Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, like you said, I think it is important to understand this is really giant. I think we as news consumers can get a little numb over time, even in the Catholic media, to the different stories that come out from the Supreme Court and the different kind of abortion laws that are challenged or upheld, which, different kind of limits at the state level on legal abortion. But rightly so, I think this is what several pro-life advocates are calling the biggest abortion case to hit to go to the Supreme Court in the last 30 years. Why? Because at the center of what the court is expected to rule on, discuss, contemplate, is this 15-week cutoff that the Mississippi law imposes, right? And so if what's at stake is whether having some kind of viability timeline like this 15-week one is constitutional or not, right? And so depending on how they rule, that could lead to an unraveling of the right to legal abortion in other states. It could potentially undo Roe v. Wade and send the matter of legal abortion back to the states and back especially to elected representatives. So there has been no case like this in decades.
There's some with Paolo Kay from last week, some snippets of the news going on, and keep that in prayer. Lots of things headed to the Supreme Court, including a great case that can work on Roe v. Wade and could outlaw, at least in a nationwide basis, abortion. Would still be up to the states to decide on that. Time now to switch gears and head into today's Story Corner. beautiful story here today called Unwrapping the Gift. Jillian, 7-year-old girl who cannot sit still in school. She continually gets up, gets distracted, and just flies with thoughts, doesn't follow lessons. Her teachers worry about her. They punish her. They scold her. They reward the few times she's attentive, but nothing. Jillian does not know how to sit and cannot be attentive. When she comes home, her mother punishes her too. So not only does Jillian have bad grades and punishment at school, she suffers at home. One day, Jillian's mother is called to school. The lady, sad as someone waiting for bad news, takes her hand and goes to the interview room. The teachers speak of illness and obvious disorder. Maybe it's hyperactivity or maybe she needs a medication. During the interview, though, an old teacher arrives who knows the little girl. He asks all the adults, mother, and colleagues to follow him into an adjoining room where she can still be seen. As he leaves, he tells Jillian they'll be back soon, and he turns on an old radio with some music on. As the girl is alone in the room, she immediately gets up and begins to move, up and down, chasing the music in the air with her feet and her heart. The teacher smiles as the colleagues and mother look at him between confusion and compassion, with that look often given to the old. So he says, "See, Jillian is not sick. Jillian is a dancer." He recommends that her mother take her to a dance class and her colleagues make her dance from time to time. She attends her first lesson, and when she gets home, she tells her mother, "Everyone is like me. No one can sit there." In 1981, after a career as a dancer, opening her own dance academy and receiving international recognition for her art, Jillian Lynn becomes the choreographer of the musical Cats. Hopefully, all different children find adults capable of welcoming them for who they are and not for what they lack. Long live the differences, the little black sheep and the misunderstood. They're the ones who create beauty in this world. From 1 Corinthians 12, 4-7, there are different kinds of spiritual gifts, but the same Spirit. There are different forms of service, but the same Lord. Different workings, but the same God who produces all of them in everyone. To each individual, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for some benefits.